Thank you so much. As I told you yesterday, this directive is my research area, because when I was in Maastricht last year and the year before, I was conducting a project on remedies for violation of the right to counsel. I didn't touch only the right to access to lawyer, but I touched I was trying to clarify which remedies the member states provide in case of other violations of the right to counsel, for instance, violation of the right to effective assistance of counsel, etc. So, but access to lawyer is the access to lawyer directive is also a bit more than just the presence of counsel. So this is what we are going to see today also. And I'm gonna talk about, I think I killed it.
Try again. Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. I will give you information about the general aspects of this directive, about the content of the right to access to lawyer, its derogations, right to access to lawyer in European arrest warrant cases, and what is, the most important, interesting is the remedies for violation of the right to counsel. Of course, the right itself is the most important, but the remedies are very problematic and very interesting. So, right to access to lawyer directive was the third directive in the roadmap, and it was supposed to be served with legal aid, but as you know, it didn't turn out, so this right is only about participation of counsel. And in the roadmap, it was said that the right to counsel should be provided at the earliest appropriate stage in order to safeguard the fairness of the proceedings. So what does it mean in the legal scholarship that it has to guard safeguard the fairness of the proceedings? In theoretical literature, it's said that the right to counsel serves three aspects. First, participation of counsel guarantees the best outcome of the case. It doesn't mean that the person is acquitted. It means that the innocent are acquitted and the ones who are guilty, they are convicted, but they get the sentence. They, the best for them in the when we think about the goal of resocialization, etc. So if somebody really goes to prison, even if the counsel is there and effective, etc., it doesn't mean that the right to counsel has been violated. This is something that really has to be made clear. The second aspect of the right to counsel is that the counsel is there to guarantee that the rights of a person are respected. Of course, it's closely related to the first aspect, but it also has a separate meaning. Every person, no matter if actually innocent or guilty, should receive fair trial and fair treatment in the proceedings. So that is why counsel is there. Counsel protects, for instance, Article 3 rights, he protects Article 6 rights, etc. So that is also the reason counsel is there. And the third one, which is not much discussed openly, but it's there in the legal literature, it's that the counsel is there because of human companionship. Otherwise, the person is alone in these proceedings. He doesn't understand what's happening, and due to that, of course, he can't exercise his rights, but this human aspect is also important. So that is why I would say that when you think about rights of a person, I mean procedural rights of a person in criminal proceedings as a pyramid, counsel is the foundation of this pyramid. Because presence and participation of counsel guarantees that this pyramid actually looks like pyramid. Otherwise it collapses when the counsel is not there. The right to counsel directive, the negotiations were not very peaceful. They were rather complicated. And one of the very complicated aspects was, of course, remedies part, which nobody wanted. Not nobody, but a lot of people didn't want to accept. And it turned out there is no balance between recitals and articles, because there are a lot of recitals, they are very long, you have to always read the recitals and articles together, so everything that was not agreed is hidden in this recitals and has to be searched very carefully. And the right to counsel access to lawyer directive was compromise, and you can see it from different aspects. Minor offenses were brought in, like other directives. Temporary derogations, which of course a lot of scholars don't like at all. Confidentiality was written there rather vaguely, I would say. Legal aid was left out. This was also the compromise. And the nature of remedies, which is very, very general. It was also the result of compromise. So, as last time, I told you, when you read the directive, you have to take into account that Strasbourg case law is minimum, and the directive might raise the standard. Charter applies, and the transposition was 2 years ago? Mm-hmm. Not two, mm-hmm. One and a half. So, a transposition date is over. So, it's applicable since a person is made aware of by competent authorities that he's suspected of having committed a criminal offence, so it doesn't depend on arrest. When we think about the European Court of Human Rights case law, it seems to me that the person has the right to access to lawyer since arrest, I would say, because Saldus and its follow-up case law seems to indicate, this is what also my colleague at the Maastricht University, who is a specialist in this area, says, that it's the Saldus case law in the European Court of Human Rights is indicating that the right to access to lawyer applies since the arrest of a person. But in this sense, the directive is broader. The directive applies until final determination of guilt. It applies also in European arrest warrant cases. It clearly says that it applies to witnesses who, in fact, are suspected of committing a crime. And it has the limitation for minor offences, which you can see in Article 2. So it also could be against the Engel criteria, but we are not yet sure about it. So what is the right to access to a lawyer? Clearly it's not only presence. Right to access to lawyer has to be provided in the way that the defense rights can be exercised in a practical and effective way. It also comes from a rather old case of European Court of Human Rights, Artico versus Italy, when it said that the the right to counsel has to be effective, practical and effective, not theoretical and illusory. So there should be something more than mere presence. It has to be provided without undue delay, but no later than provided in Article 3, paragraph 2. And there is a list before interrogation, after deprivation of liberty, whichever comes first, then the right to counsel has to be provided. So it's rather clear from this paragraph that it is not connected only to deprivation of liberty. It can be the questioning can also happen without deprivation of liberty, so counsel has to be provided. It includes the right to meet in private, the right to be present and participate effectively. This is something for the Netherlands. Please ask for preliminary reference. Yesterday, when I was talking about the Estonian Supreme Court of Court's case law on right to access to case file, I went back to hotel and thought maybe I drew a very dark picture about Estonia yesterday here. But we have nice things also. Right to access to lawyer is provided very well in Estonia. When a person becomes suspect, he immediately has a right to choose a lawyer, or if he wants, he can ask for legal aid. Our legal aid is not dependent on income of a person, so every person who doesn't want to pay for the counsel himself can ask for legal aid counsel. And the counsel has right to be present and participate effectively during interrogations. And it really means that counsel can do all the stuff that good counsels do during interrogation. Give advice, ask to rephrase questions, tell the person to not say anything anymore, etc. So counsels can be there and be effective. So if there is a problem, you feel that there is a problem in your national law about this aspect, then please ask for, try to get preliminary reference from the ECJ about the meaning of effective. And counsel also has the right to be to attend, but the law doesn't say that participate effectively in investigative and evidence gathering acts, at least those that are listed in Article 3. So for some reason, the directive changes its wording. Here it's effective, here is participate effectively, here it's at them. Why is it so? I don't know. So derogations. Geographical remoteness, whatever it is, maybe it's applicable in your country, I don't know. Which can be applied upon arrest, only temporarily, of course. And compelling reasons, only in pre-trial proceedings. And these are two where there is an urgent need to avert serious adverse consequences for the life, liberty, or physical integrity of a person, or where immediate action by the investigative authorities is imperative to prevent substantial jeopardy to criminal proceedings. So I would say that this should be interpreted in a very limited way, but the derogations really are there. Conditions to apply derogations. They have to be proportionate, limited in time, of course only in pre-trial proceedings. Not based only on offense, but other circumstances of the case. do not prejudice the overall fairness of proceedings, only case by case, so it can't be that in every murder case we do like that, every time they have to be weighed. Decided by a competent authority, and this, if this authority is not the judge, then they have to be subject to judicial review. So, in Saldus versus Turkey, the European Court of Human Rights also spoke about interrogations and the fact that right to access to lawyer can be limited or deprived when there are compelling reasons. The European Court of Human Rights didn't open the meaning of compelling reasons in Saldus versus Turkey, and everybody was waiting for that, to know what the compelling reasons are. And now we know, because there is, I think you know, there is a case, Ibrahim and others versus the UK, and there in the paragraph 270 and the following, it's 258 and the following explain what the compelling reasons are, but due to the fact that the directive was already there, most of these compelling reasons are based on what is meant by compelling reasons in the directive. So now it seems that the European Union has dictated the meaning of compelling reasons. Waiver has to be informed, voluntary, unequivocal. So person has to, it's very closely connected to the Right to Information Directive, because person has to be first be aware that he has the right, and he also has to know what the content of the right is and what happens if he waives the right, and he it has to be voluntary. What is voluntary is, of course, always a question, because how much pressure they can put you to waive your rights. So this is really a question, and it has to be recorded in accordance with national procedure. This is of course problematic, because if national procedure says that it can be oral, without videotaping, without anything, then it's very difficult for a person to prove afterwards that it wasn't a voluntary waiver. So this is what they didn't change. At any time, it should be revocable. And there are more, of course, but there are some cases which the waivers have really gone wrong. And again, Estonia is here with an exceptional case in this area, I would say, because there was a minor who waived his right for his chosen counsel in rather suspicious circumstances. And he was appointed a legal aid lawyer in the presence of whom he admitted his guilt. Before that, he always said that he didn't do it. So there was the European Court of Human Rights said that the circumstances of the case were very suspicious, and it seemed that the waiver was not voluntary. In Dvorsky versus Croatia, the situation was rather similar. Again, chosen counsel was somehow changed to a legal aid counsel appointed by authorities, and the legal aid counsel was the guy who formerly worked in this office as a police officer. So, of course, Dvorsky admitted guilt, and there was, for European Court of Human Rights, there was a problem with this case. And in these, both of these cases, the European Court of Human Rights did, what it has done in recent years, and which the scholars really, really like, the European Court of Human Rights said that the proper remedy for such violation are new proceedings. So you should repeat the proceedings. But of course, it's very, very difficult in a situation where the violation of the right to choose one counsel has occurred in pre-trial proceedings. It's very complicated. The only thing you can do is leave out the statements made in the presence of not so friendly counsel, but this is in any case, this due to this violation, I would say that this is rather how to put it in nice words, but it's a screwed up case for this this person really, because everything is built upon those statements. So even if those statements are left out, there is more information about guilt of a person which has been gathered based on this information. So here you can see how the violation actually starts the snowball, and it gets bigger for this person, and in the center there are his statements, and even if you take those out, the snowball remains, and the person is convicted anyway. So European arrest warrant cases, what is new is the fact that in issuing member states, the lawyer can also be provided if a person asks for that, and the role of this lawyer is to assist the lawyer in the executing member states, but be aware that because the European arrest warrant cases are in a very limited time circumstances, those time limitations can actually mean that a person's right to have counsel in issuing member states is in fact not provided. And now the remedies. This is the full article of remedies, and it didn't look like that at the beginning. At the beginning it had three paragraphs, and one of those paragraphs said that if violation of the right to access to lawyer has occurred, then persons should be put back to the position where he would have been if violation would not have happened. So basically, it meant that if you gave statements in violation of your right to access to a lawyer, those statements should be deleted in whichever way it's done in your member states. If there is another way to put the person back to the position where he would have been, then this way could also be applied. But a number of member states, including Sweden, rejected this because there are member states who have the principle of free evaluation of evidence, which means that everything goes to the judge, and judge himself decides what to do with evidence that might be have been gathered in violation of the right to counsel, or in any other violation. So the only thing that was left here in this paragraph, in this article, was that remedy has to be effective. What does it mean? Nobody knows. If statements have been made by suspect or accused person, then it has to be guaranteed that fairness of the proceedings are respected. But nothing is said about what to do with those statements. So very, very soft and vague wording. What makes the case very interesting is the fact that in recital 50, the direct reference is made to the Saldus case. As you probably know, in Saldus case, it was said that when statements have been made in violation of the right to access to a lawyer, then those statements cannot be used for a person's conviction. They have to be left out from the body of evidence. And for scholars, it also seemed actually that Saldus says that if statements have been gathered in a way that there was a compelling reason to not to give the person access to a lawyer, then those statements cannot be used for person's conviction either. Then they can be used only, I don't know, to deal with the immediate danger at that point of time when there was, for instance, where there is a case of we suspect that there is a bomb somewhere. We question the person without the lawyer. Ask where the bomb is. We can. He says where it is. We can remove the bomb, but we cannot use his statements for his conviction. That is what Saldus said. At least that is how scholars interpreted it. And that is what is inserted to this article, because this is the wording of Saldus here. incriminating statements made during police interrogation without access to a lawyer are used for, if they are used for conviction, then the rights of defense are irretrievably prejudiced. This means that those statements, no matter if made in presence of compelling reasons or not, can't be used for conviction. So what changed? What changed was Ibrahim. Ibrahim was the case. Saldus was from 2009, was it? 8 or 9. It always confuses me. But it was from there. Ibrahim is the case of 13th of September 2016. Ibrahim was the case of London bombing, so there was a terrorist case, and what the European Court of Human Rights said there was that if there has the right to access to lawyer has been denied and there are no compelling reasons, even those statements given in absence of lawyer can be used for one's conviction if fairness of the proceedings has been respected. So there has been violation, but it's okay to use the evidence if fairness of the proceedings has been respected. So in recent years, the European Court of Human Rights has step by step moved with every right closer to the fairness of the proceedings as a whole principle. And when we think about what I said at the beginning of my speech, how important the right to counsel is, that it is the foundation of fairness of the proceedings and the foundation of other procedural rights, because counsel is there to help to exercise such rights, then I would say that this fairness as a proceeding whole, fairness test, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense because whenever the right to counsel has been violated, there can't be such thing as fair proceedings. And you, when you think about the snowball effect, talking about, that when the statements are given, then it starts the whole process. The statements are either they are left out, but the snowball or not, but the snowball still rolls. And this means that those statements given at the beginning of proceedings often are very, very important. If they are given in violation of the right to counsel, then this violation actually follows the whole proceedings to the court proceeding. And now the legal scholarship actually is, and there is a case in the European Court of Human Rights right now, waiting for the judgment. Which test we should use? Either Saldus, which was a very good test when we think about how important the right to counsel is, or Ibrahim, which is a bad test, but it was given in the specific circumstances of the case because it was a terrorist case, and it seems that the European Court of Human Rights was a bit emotional in this matter, and they could have been, discussed it with other scholars also, they could have solved this problem by still using the test of Saldus. But somehow they decided not. They could have used Saldus case and those guys still would have convicted, but they decided to go with a much more lenient test. But now the question is what the EU should do. Because at the moment, Ibrahim is what's standing in the European Court of Human Rights, but what is standing in the EU? Remember, the European Court of Human Rights standard is the minimum. But what was minimum at the time when the EU directive was composed was Saldus. So maybe European Court of Human Rights, European Union should not follow this standard and should stick to the Saldus standard, because it's rather clearly said in this Article 50, in this recital 50, that it is the Saldus standard we are laying on. So, who knows? We are waiting for answers from the ECJ, but we don't know when they come. And just to give you a short overview of what I did in my project, I asked from the ministries of justice, the justices of all member states except Malta, Cyprus and France, which I couldn't reach, whether they changed their law on remedies for violation of the right to access to a lawyer due to the directive. And most of them said that they didn't, because they had excellent effective remedies. And then I asked for what happens if right to access to lawyer has been violated in pre-trial proceedings during person's questioning. There are 5 member states which do not exclude those statements. And there are 16 member states which do not exclude, apply fruit of poisonous tree, if you know what I mean. This is the leaving out the other evidence that has been received based on those statements. These are the answers I have gathered based on questioning the lawyers. I could also read Malta, France and Cyprus, which was really nice. So I have all 28 member states. You can either agree or you can disagree, because sometimes even I had a couple of lawyers answering me from the once member states, and sometimes those answers were rather contradictory. So, so it's questionnaires are rather difficult things if you ask about basically factual aspects of life. But what can you do? But I think even if we think that maybe a couple of those member states haven't given the right answers, the picture still is rather this one. And Sweden definitely is there, up there. And Austria is up there in those five member states. So, and yeah, Cyprus, Denmark, Poland. Somebody from Poland. Poland doesn't recognize the exclusionary rule. Is it true? Yeah. So, and the last thing I would like to say about those remedies is that when the principle is that when there is no remedy, when there is no effective remedy, there is no right. So, in those countries, 5 and 16, do you think there is actually the right to access to a lawyer?